Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. My guest tonight is Jeanette Matasha Lucas. She is going to go part one and part two with us this evening. Tonight, I'm going to give only a partial biography on her. Part two will finish up with a lengthier biography on her. And as you hear from our interview and discussions tonight, we both have a lot to share about some of our abilities. But let's get right to this, shall we? Let's talk just a little bit more about part one here with Jeanette. Jeanette is known for consulting and technical advising for her psychic and dowsing abilities. She has had four near-death experiences, starting from the age of 7 to 38. Two of the NDEs were in the hospital where she had actually flatlined. She has an ability called synesthesia, which only 4% of the world has this ability. Synesthesia is where different parts of the brain are turned on. Some people see colors, some people see movement, some people see scenes, and from those scenes and those colors and movement, they are able to interpret differently what is happening in somebody's life. Some doctors would call this ability a superhuman ability. As a super ability, she has been able to help people with many different aspects of their lives. One of the other things we talked about on the show was her alien experiences and out-of-body experiences, some which did include alien encounters. When we get to part two, we are going to learn just a little bit more about Jeanette, and she has had quite an extensive resume when it comes to finding missing persons, especially those with high-profile cases such as Kaylee Anthony Case, Jackie Benson, Chandra Levy, and 25 other missing persons in the U.S. We have a lot to talk about, so sit back, everyone, grab some popcorn, and as they say, here we go. Stay tuned.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Well, hello, Jeanette, and thank you so very much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Jeanette, you know, usually how I operate on my shows, and most people know how I go about things, is I always like to have a background or an introduction of somebody in the respect of how they became what they are today. And you have quite a history, obviously, and you've been around town a few times, but why don't we start very basically, as I always do with all my guests, and I want you to just think back for a moment, as far back as you can go, and I would like you to tell people a little bit about when you first became aware that maybe something about you was just a little bit different than anyone else, and you started to recognize this in your life.
I think that if I go back to age 7, when I lived in Falls Church, Virginia, I saw things in my bedroom, and I think they were, at that time, they're now termed shadow people, and I thought I saw ghosts, and I thought I saw this, and I thought I saw that, and the only way a 7-year-old can term it is the word ghosts, and people that were in a shadow, because kids don't know all the details. And so I would lay in bed and just cover my blankets on top of my head. And I would also say, go away, go away. But at the same time, within a short period, so that was the ghosty thing and the shadow people situation. And then my father had a meeting with the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the military at our house in Falls Church, Virginia. And the reason I bring this up is at the same age, they were in the background learning how to use dowsing for the military, for the U.S. military. And my brother tried it to show them, tried the technique of dowsing with the L rods for the Marines to understand it from a kid's perspective, which is more layman terms. And so he wasn't doing as well as he should have. So I ran out there and said, let me show you. I said, you track the creek bed. It stays straight ahead. Then when, if it goes left or right, or in a different direction, then you know to go in that particular direction to dig. I guess it made a dent, so the Marines finally understood it. Oh, watch this, watch that. It could be the way my dad conveyed it. Maybe he was too technical. I'm not technical. Mine is follow the rod, and if it goes left, then the stream is going to the left. If the stream goes to the right, the rod will go right. And then we start digging, and there's the water. That didn't really tell me I had an ability, but shortly after that gave me some ideas. So you got the ghosties, you got the dowsing, and then my father took us to a gentleman to get tested for our psychic ability, and that was about age 8. And what he did was he took a deck of cards and he laid them out, and he said, okay, he laid them out upside down, just like Duke University does. And what happened is you had to tell him whether it was a queen of diamonds, I mean, it was a diamond, a spade, and so forth. And so what I did was I said, I see this, I see that, I see this, I see that. I didn't do too badly, but what was interesting is my siblings were doing really well. And I thought, oh my God, I'm an idiot. And then my twin and my sister Becky finally told me that they were looking in the man's glasses. Check that out.
Oh,
and they saw... Yeah, they saw what the card was. So yeah. They saw he had a diamond and laid it down. So they cheated. And I said, I'm not going to do that. They cheated. And it blew the whole experiment, right? But yeah. I was getting material. I was getting information. And they were cheating. So I look at it like, okay, that's not fair. So I did speak up. And then I guess I guess I was in third grade, so that's about age 9. My dad took me to a friend's house in Maryland. So I'm from the DC area. So I'm right near the line of DC in Virginia. And we drove about an hour away to Frederick, Maryland. Now, this is what I think happened with, I have this weird ability, unique talent. And so I was at the house. I went to bed, had a dream, woke up at 2 a.m., ran and told my dad. I had this terrible dream about a murder and about the victim and about the suspect and about the life of the victim so that they would understand who it was. And he goes, okay, well, just remember it as best as you can and go to bed. So at 8 a.m., the woman where we stayed at her house in Frederick, Maryland, got a call that morning from a police officer. And she was a psychic who talked with the police to locate missing people or missing items or robberies or whatever. And she was giving me some pointers. And she also read me and said, oh, you're going to be a psychic. And I thought to myself, this is never going to happen. And she said, you're also going to have a boyfriend at like 16 and so forth and so on. And I mean, she gave me a lot of details. And it was an eye opener because I'd never been to a psychic, I guess, at that point. And she was giving me details more. So I never saw that coming. It hit me out of the blue. So anyway, the police officer called and said there was a missing kid, and the lady was with my father at breakfast. He told her the dream of the missing person and so forth and the suspect and all the details. So I also said, well, we're going to go here. And I drew a house and a half moon driveway. And the house was Revolutionary and it was square and stone and it had a hip roof. And I didn't know the word hip roof. So I said, let me just draw it. I said, we're going here. This is important. And she had already been to the man's house, the police officer's house. So the police officer got there and he said, where'd you get this? I said, I just drew it. We're going there. And he goes, yes, we are. I forgot something. We have to go there. And I said, okay. So we get there and it was identical to the picture I drew. And I thought, it's quite an adjustment when you find out you have very strong ability. And then everything unfolded. It was my first crime case in third grade. And when I was a kid, I wanted to get into archaeology or investigation type work, but I didn't want to be a police officer. And so I was hoping to go to college to write or to learn anything historical. I love history. So it sort of fell into, I guess, a filter. And I did the missing person type of work. During the same time frame, a little later, I started doing a deck of cards that I started taking a deck of cards, not doing, but taking a deck of cards. I laid them on the table and I could tell you your future just with a deck of cards. Hmm. And my dad goes, tell me what you see. So I use this quick term with people, show me, show me, show me. And what happens is I start seeing pictures in the deck of cards. And I said, okay, it feels like this. And then I would listen, which is my synesthesia, which is another unusual talent. And I said, I see a picture of a school and it looks like this, this, and this. And then I hear a time frame like November. And then I see a person with the name C or K, like Chuck, Charlie, Kevin. It feels like a K. And I would give all the details to the person and they just thought, okay, that's weird. And then they would come back and say, everything you said was correct. Hmm. And it happened so many times. And then the only thing I liked about it was when I was a kid in high school, it was 20 an hour or 20 for a half an hour. That was good money. That was the only thing I liked about it. It was awkward to tell people how I felt about things. I would tell them information and people would get upset because I would be very direct. But when you're a kid, you're not sure how to display the information so that it's not hurtful. Mm-hmm. Oh, for example, one man came in and I told him he and his wife were going to have another kid. And he stood up, slapped the table. Of course, it scared the bejesus out of me. And, you know, I mean, a really loud slap on the table. No, we're getting a divorce. I said, you're not getting a divorce, because he was in love with this other girl. I said, no, you're having another son. And he goes, no. And then like a month later, his wife found out she was pregnant. Mm. And I said, this kid is so wonderful. You're going to get involved with the baseball coaching. Your marriage is going to work out. It's going to be great. All of that happened. And he called me years later, like 20 years later, and said, Jenna, that was just uncanny. It did save my marriage. And the girlfriend walked away. But you know what? She didn't want me to have another kid. And it happened. So you do get surprises with your ability. And abilities get better through the years. And I'm sure you felt the same way, Kelly.
When you were making predictions and you started as, did I hear you correctly that this was even at the age of like third grade, something like that, you're starting to make all these types of predictions. Did you have any, because I mentioned this in the introduction, did you have any near-death experiences that may have changed something within the wiring within your brain that could have contributed to all this before the age of third grade. Did you have any kind of near-death experience?
Yes. So the first, and I'll make this short. The first one was like 6 or 7 and I almost drowned. And that was a process. And then at 7, I was in an accident, sliced in the head and had an extreme near death. And then, so that was under third grade.
Mm-hmm.
And then they told me I'd have another one at 27. And when I say they, the other side, when I had my near death said, your whole life will change at 27. You'll have another near death. And I thought, okay, what the heck? I didn't know what was going to happen. So they didn't say, oh, you're going to be chopped up or anything like that. They didn't say, oh, you're going to be in a fire. They didn't give the specific detail. They did give details that you will know, because once you see this famous actress who writes a book, Shirley MacLaine, you will know that that's when it's coming. Almost like, watch out for this kind of timing. And I told my sister, I said, something weird's going to happen. I don't know if I'm going to die, but just keep an eye out for me. And the next near death did happen. I was in a very bad car wreck and I had a concussion for a year, and I would pass out or have to go lay down for a long time. It was rough.
You know, you hear these things, and usually when people are telling me about their abilities, and no matter what they are, because they're not all the same for anyone. And I think Jeanette can clarify that as well, that just because, for example, let's say you talk to a psychic and they have the ability to see something, and then you talk to another psychic and they have the ability to see something else, or they have a different type of gift that not all people can do the same thing. And you having such devastating trauma, one of the things that I have just written about, and it should be out in the November issue of Paranormality, was a magazine, was something called Am I a Neurodivergent Beacon, which is simply, how the heck did I become somebody like a lighthouse, like you're talking about, Jeanette? You know, all of a sudden, all these things are coming to you. Well, what happens as part of the trauma to some of these extreme events is that your brain does go through what is called a type of rewiring, and not necessarily is it a logical rewiring. I mean, sometimes it could be a very bad thing that happens to people. It just so happens that in your case, wherever your brain rewired to after each and every traumatic event, all of a sudden, like a beacon, like a Christmas tree, you light up even more. You see things. And I always ask people, either before the interview or after the interview, by chance, did you have a near-death experience? Because there seems to be a connection. So let's talk a little bit about when you finally, I don't know if I want to talk about, let's talk a little bit about synesthesia, now that we're kind of talking about the brain and the abilities that some people have. Mm-hmm. So according to the introduction that I had, let's see, you mentioned that 4% of people in the world potentially has this sort of thing. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is and what you do and what makes you unique?
Well, to my knowledge, synesthesia is a part of the brain that has been turned on. And as I mentioned, only 4% of the world has it. And it creates, for example, if I'm looking at you, let's say we're talking about, and I have to say the name, Dr. Kelly Schultz, and I say, oh, I get a color with the name,
right,
or I get information with the name. So I sort of catalog it. Is it a book page, which means a paragraph, a sentence? And then the next page, do I get a color? And then the next page, do I get dates and times? And the next page, is it a vision? And then I put them all together, scramble it, and say, okay, it looks like the following things are all together. And that's the kind of unusual ability I have. And synesthesia, people with synesthesia, like my friend Angela Ford, and I've met a couple others, not very many, that has synesthesia, and they can hear information like a date and a name. so when I work on a homicide or a missing person, and I practice it all the time. For example, somebody called me about a little missing girl, and if I see the color black and it's so thick, typically the child is is deceased or alive. If I see a lot of colors of movement, the child is definitely alive. So I sort of isolate what the colors will mean and define it. And then I say, oh, here's a couple of paragraphs. Then here's a couple of comments. And then if a person from the other side or a deceased individual from the other side wants to come in and ad lib and give details, I can talk to the other side. I've only had two circumstances where the other side doesn't want to come in and talk. Why? I have no clue. Regarding, so you got colors and audible, and then you have info, and then you have visions, and those are all dramatic. Not all psychics get the colors, and not all psychics hear the information, but I try to be as specific as possible. So for example, for you, I had a funny tummy feel just now. So I also call that deviceless body dowsing, because I'm also a water dowser, regular dowser. And I say, oh, okay, so things you've got to change on November 7, November 8th. And so we're talking about you. And then I see a color and I see orange, which is high energy. And I'm thinking, okay, so what else do you want to say about this? It shows, okay, so then they give me the vision. Each page is different. And it shows you running up a couple of steps, 1, 2, 3 steps. And each step is easy because you're running up the steps, which means you have to hurry to do something. And you have some new connections. But what's interesting is I have to translate the vision. And a lot of people or psychics don't translate the vision. They just say it. Well, how are you going to understand what running up the steps means? So I say, you're running up the steps. A, you're in high speed mode. So this means it's going to happen quickly. B, the steps look good. C, there's a safety catch-all for the steps, which means even if you do something really fast, you're going to be okay. So financially, it's an okay. So it's nothing negative. So I put all these pieces together. And even though it sounds, you know, I don't want to say the word weird. I want to say unusual translation, unusual delivery. But that's, you know, because you're thinking, what kind of subject matter goes with it? Well, I'm going to say it's travel. So it's going to be some kind of connection out of nowhere that calls and comes and says, hey, Kelly, would you like to do this speaking engagement? Because I'm going to before March. And they say, we'd like you to come do this, or we'd like you to come do that. And they give me the letter C. I think it's C. I don't think it's K. So I'm going to go with California. But for some reason, another man is talking to you. And I can't quite get his name. But a second man comes in and his name feels like Mark. If I'm wrong, it's Martin. So these are some samples of some of the things that come forward for people. It's not always dreary news. Good news for you is that it's going to happen quickly. Yes, it's coming in.
It is? Is this really going to happen?
Yes. So what I do is, you know, I when I'm doing work, why waste my time? Why not give you information? And then you can tell people, oh, this happened. And then all of a sudden, I'm going to November 17. There's a turnaround and decision-making time. And the 23rd of November, I mean, you're going to be super busy in November. You're just going to throw your hands in the air and go, oh, my God. But it's not a negative busy. It's a busy, busy, busy. So it's good news.
Well, I'll let you know, but now you've got everybody's curiosity up. So, but here's a question that people would ask you, Jeanette. Can you predict or see your own life?
No. I can see things for myself. For example, I'll be told, don't do this because this is going to happen. You know, there are repercussions from some of the choices you make. When I was young, I was told when I had my near death to marry the blonde. And what was really uncanny was that I had three blondes in mind. And they said, the blonde is going to work out. And one was a U.S. Marshal, one was a physicist, and the other one is my husband now. And he is a railroad engineer.
Yeah.
And they didn't, and they talked about, this was really uncanny. They showed me a picture of a train station. And I thought, why am I going to a train station? And then eventually he was my roommate. And I thought, no way. And then one day, and this is just a sample of funniness, is I walked in and met him for the first time. And I saw this angel in bright light coming to me. This is your future husband. And I was like, what? And I thought, okay, yeah, okay, that's a cute game. But I had always been interested in, and I tell women, if you really like a certain kind of guy, visualize yourself marrying the good guy, but also request that he isn't an alcoholic. He isn't this, he isn't that, but right. He is this. So I always had a thing for, I always thought some particular actor was really cute. And my husband actually gets stopped and asks if he's that actor.
Wow.
Which is really funny. So I picked the right one. I'm married. I had two daughters. Everything's very successful. We don't talk about our daily lives are not the paranormal. He got up, he got ready for work. I clean the dishes. It's a normal day.
Right.
I coordinate clients. Like this afternoon, I have to do a lady that I have to work on a case with a lady with four missing kitty cats. Yeah. Tomorrow is a relationship. I mean, every day is a different phone call and different subject matters. So for myself, yes, I'm very particular about what I decide to do. I know this is going to be a hectic time for me, so I'm very cautious about what I jump into feet first with.
Well, you know, what's interesting about all this too, is that people don't always realize that outside of your gifts, people do have a regular life that they also continue to lead without having to continuously have this bombarding them all the time. But that does bring it to another question here. The question that I always hear about from other, at least really good psychics that really go into this very deeply, is that they get very drained when they read somebody or they involve their whole energy of their body in trying to help somebody figure something out or whatever they need to figure out. So that would be the question I would ask you. Because you do a number of these and maybe not always, you know, consistently or whatever, do you need a moment in time to allow your body to re-energize?
Most of the time I don't. I do very well with reading people. Of course, there'll be somebody who I hate to use those words, zaps me,
yeah.
But typically that's very rare. I've been in a process where lately, if I feel like it's going to be uncomfortable, I send them to someone else because yeah. I just don't have time to shut down and take a break. Right now I am on a crossroads and I'm moving forward and it's all good. And I just don't want that speed bump in the road.
Right.
And I tell people that when I send clients to other people, other readers, they're nice about it. They're frustrated. They wish they could use me, but I'm old enough to choose.
Since you've got this ability and you're connected in and you hone in on people's energy, so you've got that kind of still in you, even when you go to bed, do you ever dream of things that literally show up relatively soon when you wake up and you go, oh God, you know, I mean, what happens in your life?
So I can get a dream that tells me a prediction about so-and-so is going to die.
Yeah.
So those are the negative and those do pop in. So for example, recently I've been seeing a dead guy in the house, not a ghost, a dead guy. Yeah. So this means he's going out of his body and he's telling me, Jeanette, I'm going to pass. So we were trying to figure out who he was. So one is with my, obviously with one of my husband's coworkers. And the other one I finally figured out was my girlfriend's husband. And he, I didn't know it, but he's in the hospital right now.
Mm.
I just don't think he has lung, but he's been coming to the house and showing up. So in my dream, it walks me through the process. Oh, this is this guy. This is this guy. This is this guy. And then I had a dream about a relative. And those are difficult because, you know, you don't want to tell your daughter, I had a dream that so-and-so is going to pass. And they might get too sensitive. So I filter that kind of thing. So that is one area. Now, let's say I'm working on a radio show and I said, oh, I'm going to have a couple of people call me regarding missing people. I had a show just like that where I predicted it and two people called and I said, one is in the Southwest and the other one is Seattle. So I couldn't take, and I said, I won't be able to take one of the cases. And a third one actually popped up and I said, both from the Southwest, one was Louisiana and the other one was Mississippi. And the Seattle one I couldn't take. And the other one, and this is what I tell people about some cases are just they fall like a domino in place. It's very successful. You can't control it. It's out of your control. It's meant to be solved. And then you have cases where it's a druggie. And those are a 50-50 detail.
Right.
Like people call me and say, oh, my relative is a druggie. What do you think? And I'll say, oh, I can only tell you where the person is, because they are so hallucinogenic that you can't tell what's real and what's not. And it's very, very awkward. So, and I tell, like, if the police called, I said, ah, I hate those cases. So I'll say something like, it looks like it's bad news, or it looks like they're still alive. And I've even had cops call me and I say, no, they're still alive running around. So you'll eventually find them. And it happened, which was great, but, those are the toughest. So then, of course, I have regular dreams about predictions for the U.S. because, of course, I like to say things. And I posted on my Facebook site under my father's name, Louis Matesha. That's my maiden name. And sometimes people get very angry about the prediction. I said, we're going to be bombed by China or Russia. And people got really pissed. And they're like, why are you telling us this? And I said, because you need to be prepared. All right. I'm not saying this to hurt your feelings. This isn't about feelings. This is about prepping. And you don't prep to have a gun. You have to have a prep to leave. So you have to have, you know, a gallon of water, 2 gallons of water, always gas in your tank, you know, have $1,000 in your house to be able to pick up and leave if you have to. And then people were thinking, here's the next step. Where do you think these bombings are going to happen? So I said, well, definitely Chicago, definitely Miami, definitely here, definitely there. And I mean, it's all going to happen at the same time, very similar timing. And people were just shocked. I could be so, they thought it was too much into their life. And I said, okay, again, this is for prepping. So these are some of the dreams I have. For example, my husband works for Amtrak. And I will tell him, it feels like a train wreck, but nothing to do with you. It feels like at a distance, but it's coming very quickly. And what happens is, if it's a train wreck in Seattle, it doesn't affect us. If it's a train wreck in North Carolina, South Carolina, DC, Boston, it does affect my husband's timing. And sometimes he has to literally take off for 3 days because trains aren't moving. So instead, they're moving people on buses. So it gets complicated with the dream work. So far, I have had no negative dreams about you. Most of my friends, no negative dreams. But my life is clean of any kind of, I get rid of all the people that are clients that call that are druggies. I just don't take them on. So I'm fortunate, again, with that choice. And it also, again, it affects my dream work.
You know, everybody has their protocol. And not always can a psychic just go to the police department and go, I think I know where the body is. I think the body's buried here, or this is how it was done. Because when I worked in law, and I worked in law for 8 years, and I was also had some undercover investigative duties and stuff like that, one of the things that I learned, at least where I'm from, was that the very first person that these people or the police will look at will be the person reporting the information. Have you ever run into those roadblocks where you need to be careful about being the one being looked at because you seem to know too much information?
I don't think I've ever had a problem. But then again, my father's was pretty famous.
Right.
So because I'm the one following in his footsteps, I think that I was viewed differently.
Yeah.
So thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that does play into it a lot. If you're kind of a person that has, I don't know, not as known or whatever, it's just not something someone can just do and, you know, walk into any station around here. The first thing they'll do is they'll probably roll their eyes. The second thing they'll probably do is go, sorry, it's out of our jurisdiction. Okay. The person is buried in another county. That's their jurisdiction. Sometimes, and we just had something like this happen. Something will happen in one county and the person will flee to another county. And the police, as soon as they get right down to that county line, and the person crosses that county line to something else, very smart people around here, out of their jurisdiction, all done, all over with. So it's really interesting how this thing plays out. But before we get into that, I wanted to ask you a little bit about one of the things also that you mentioned in your introduction, and is the fact that you've had alien experiences. Now, I'm still on the fence. I have had 3 to 4 different theories now about the handprint that ended up on my body. And mm-hmm. and everybody has, oh, it was this. And then someone says, no, it was that. And then another one goes, no, it was this. And it's like, okay, I give up. Everybody has their theory about what this handprint was on my body. But I want to ask you about your experiences. I believe you say talking about or alien experiences. What have you had, Jeanette?
So I'm going to try to make each one, I'm not going to give you all the details. I'm just going to make each one short stories. So what I did was I practiced the out-of-body experience. That was my first attempt to do, a connection with outside of the world, you know, right. not on planet Earth. And I used the Shirley MacLaine theory where you put a silver band behind your back so that you're connected to Earth. And so I went out of my body. So I know I'm out of my body and I'm in outer space. And suddenly I see this potato shaped alien, I guess you call it a ship. And it had a lot of windows and suddenly I got sucked in. But I do have a theory on that. I think we're like a little orb and we go into the building. So we can walk through the walls. All right. And I landed and this alien's looking at me and he goes, what are you doing here? And I said, I was just checking out alien spaceships and curious what's going on. He goes, I said, can you give me a tour? And he said, sure. So he, as goofy as it sounds, so he's giving me a tour of this building that is a cemetery type thing. And there are people in these, I guess you think of a potato and it's inside, he's a trash collector. So he grabs stuff from outer space and inside were people that were dead and people that were alive. And as goofy as it sounds, because I've never actually told anybody, it was people that died in outer space, from aliens to humans to animals to everything. And I saw them in this sort of pod. So it was a window and you could see there was a glass enclosure over top of it. So whether they're breathing or whatever. And for example, this sounds goofy. A couple of them were astronauts who the only part left of their body was the midline all the way to the head and everything was there. And I talked to one of the astronauts and I said, are you okay? She goes, yes. And I said, what are you doing with all these body parts? And he goes, sometimes we put them together and make something with them. And I thought, oh God, what are you making?
Yeah, goes, exactly.
But I didn't really go into that. He just kept giving me the tour of the garbage collecting of people and places and things and, you know, items. And I thought, okay, whatever. I saw several people on one side of the potato and other things I saw, you know, I don't want to say parts, but I want to say mechanical items, that kind of thing, like robots and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was my first experience. The only thing that was interesting is he looked grumpy. I said, why do you look so grumpy? And he said, well, I've been here for years and I really want to stop working here. And I said, okay. And he was gray. So I didn't feel threatened. He just looked grumpy. And I did ask him. That was one of my first. I had another one where I met with a, she's got a name. It starts with a G, I believe. She was an Indian, a female Indian goddess, the one with the arms. And I talked to her and I said, you know, I asked her about what she was all about, you know, the negative, the positive. And she said, no, I don't always do negative. I do positive too. And I said, okay. So that was I don't want to say brief. It wasn't long, but what was really interesting is when I was there meeting with her in outer space, she actually sent a red screaming on me from head to toe. And she said, I'm going to do this to you. And I said, okay, didn't hurt, didn't feel anything, but it was almost like an X-ray, but it was red. And I thought, all right, that's interesting. And then moved on to another out of body experience. So that was my second one. And a third one, and not that I asked for it, I just said, I just want to go to outer space and see what's out there. And another one I had was an actual ship with the, I guess they're called the tall blonde people. Mm-hmm. And I was on the outside of the ship and the people came and running to the window, look, somebody's out there. And they kept telling each other, somebody's out there. They didn't, it's her, whatever. They didn't say my name. And they brought me in the ship and I asked for a tour. Of course I did, because I'm nosy. So they showed me the ship inner circle or the engine room. And I said, what does that do? What does that do? Because I'm nosy. And then they showed me the living quarters. They showed a bunch of other details where the doors can open and shut. Of course, like we have things where you clap your hands and lights turn off and on, or just a bunch of different details. And I met about five people on the ship. They were all nice. Nobody was mean or rude. And but I was on the exterior, but got to go in the interior. So that was pretty cool. And they gave me a bunch of information about history. And I almost want to say I felt sorry for them because they had a problem with not their existence, but a continuation. So they talked about hybrid people. So as if they were impregnating women to have their hybrid child, human and alien, blonde. So I thought that was super interesting. And then some of the parts are still coming back to my brain to recall for recall. And some of the parts are not back yet.
Yeah. So, how old were you?
Oh, various ages. So let's see. The one with the potato was probably in my 30s. Let's see. The woman with all the arms was recent. Whoops. And the, like in the last 5 years, the blondes were before I had children. Mm-hmm. And who turned out really blonde at very high IQ, which is interesting. There was one more, but I, you know, too much to cover.
Now, of course, people would wonder, Jeanette, your kids aren't hybrid kids, are they? I mean, from you looking at your kids, has it ever crossed your mind if you by chance had a hybrid child?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, they've told me they've had dreams. Yeah. They told me they've had some experiences. They don't want to go public on it.
Yeah.
If you saw both my girls, you would say, okay, they were both towheads, you know, with very, very white blonde hair.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. My doctor told me it was going to be very hard for me to get pregnant because I had a tumor right when I wanted to start having children.
Yeah.
I put off getting married. And so I was about 38. I got pregnant in a month. I mean, it was right after the experience, which I find really weird. Now I did have, now this is sidebar. I did have a near-death experience at 27. And at the same time, when I had the near-death, when I did go to heaven, yay. I did get an alien grab me and take me to their ship, and they put something in my right lung. And I'm just about to get, I had my doctor check it out because he thought I had lung cancer. And he said that there was a thing in my lung that he thought was odd. It's never changed size or anything. So let's get a biopsy. And I said, yeah, sure. So when they went to go get it, the long and short is I woke up after the tests and five doctors were standing there and they actually asked me, have you ever been abducted, alien abducted? And I was too embarrassed. I said, no, I actually lied because I just didn't want to be judged.
Right.
And they said, well, we went in and that's why the doctors are here. They've never seen anything like it. We took the tool down your throat and we went into your right lung. And we went to get the item in your right lung, which I was told by the aliens, it was a tracker. And I was told it's the size of a dime. And they said, there's this thing in your lung that's the size of a dime. And every time we use the little grabber to grab the dime, it would soar just like a, UFO, zoom, 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 really quick so they couldn't get it. And I did happen to see the man who had the alien tracker in his wrist, and it did the same exact thing. And they never could get a biopsy because the thing moved around so quickly. Fortunately, I agreed to getting it recorded when I had the operation, I guess.
Yeah.
And so all I have to do is get it. So it'll be in a chapter in another book, but I think some of us remember stuff like that. Some of us don't. I mean, that I do remember them putting in saying it was a tracker. But yeah, we don't have it to look at it.
Well, you know, there are other people that I have spoken with, and or I saw a television program. You know, you can't believe everything you see on TV, and I think most people understand that they have to like bring it up a notch sometimes. But there was a show that I do remember watching where they, just like you, someone had something inside of them. They were trying to go after it, and they actually showed that every time they tried to grab it, it would zip away, and they could never get it in the person's body because it was just unattainable, basically. And then even there are people I've talked with too that feel they have more than one trackers inside their bodies, and that that when, you know, you just can't go to a doctor and say, yeah, you know, I wonder if there's something in my body. Maybe we could do an MRI or a CAT scan or something. And then what? Okay. So then they go in and they try to grab at it or whatever. And some of these things, believe it or not, are actually cloaked. I mean, there was a show where there was a little boy, and I saw this at his x-ray. In one moment, they said his teeth x-ray. And one moment, they said, oh my God, did he ever shoot himself in the jaw with a BB gun? Because there's a BB gun size pellet underneath one of his teeth. And they said, well, we'll just go in there. But the thing is if we take that out, unfortunately the entire tooth will have to come out. Okay. So they went to try to investigate or poke around or prod around a little bit more. And the next time they took a dental x-ray, it was gone. All right. So one moment it's there, and then they took another one and it was back. And so it was like something that was so intelligent that at the point where just like yours, I often wonder with you though, if it's in your lung area, if it's causing any physical distress on your ability to be able to breathe or anything like that. Have you noticed anything unusual regarding your abilities to function with something like this inside of you?
Well, I've gained some weight since certain, you know, the tumor and having kids and so forth.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get back on track. So my asthma has definitely picked up.
Yeah.
But then again, I mean, you know, I gained some weight. So I have to own it. It is what it is. But I do think the asthma is triggered more often. So I look at the whole picture of myself and say, what can I do to change this? And basically it's weight loss.
Yeah.
And, so other than that, I mean, I have great skin. I don't, you know, oddly enough, I supposedly I don't look my age. The only thing weight gain has done to me is puffy, but no wrinkles. And I'm 64. I mean, a lot of people are thinking, oh, she's got to be 50 or something like that, which is always complimentary. Thank you. But I think that it's a very complicated tracker in your body. And if I have another one, I do have really funny reactions in my teeth. And it's very possible that there's something there. I never asked the dentist, but I have to go to the dentist soon. I will ask them to see if there's something weird is in the teeth.
Yeah.
I never thought about the gums. I mean, I will talk to them about it. When I did buried treasure hunting, whenever gold or something unusual is there, my teeth just, I don't want to say they go crazy, but they truly react.
Yeah.
And I noticed that my fingers react. And if my fingers and teeth react, there's that gold or that treasure is at that location exactly where, excuse me, I say it is. And people, it's confirmed. People find the treasure. So, I mean, of course I'm a treasure hunter, but that's a plus. You know, it really helps. I mean, people call here all the time. Here's 10 cases. Do I have anything on treasure? If my teeth don't react, and the dowsing can also help. I said, I don't see anything at any of these 10 cases. People get upset. I'm like, well, you got to pay me for my time. If there's no reaction again on the possible tracker in the mouth, which I didn't consider, then it is what it is. Now, doesn't it make you wonder? Because I heard aliens like gold and they like possibly uranium or whatever. I'm not really sure. I just think it's very interesting that I have that ability to find stuff and my teeth are the trigger for finding the items, you know?
Yeah. I think about this, even within myself, people have asked me, do I think I have some kind of an implant? My first reaction is I don't recall, other than a praying mantis being in one of my dreams that scared the bejesus out of me. I kid you not. I woke up scared as hell. I did. I said out loud, I don't ever, ever, ever want to see anything like that in my life or in my dreams ever again. I haven't, but something really strange happened to me just a couple nights ago. I told my husband about this and I said, I don't know what that was, but I have had situations. A couple nights ago, I was just lying and sleeping. I was sleeping in bed. We were out of not at home. We were visiting a friend and we stayed overnight in a hotel, and I never had this happen before. And I was laying there and all of a sudden my head started to, kind of like my brain inside my head started to, it felt like it was being pulled out. I mean, it's the craziest feeling you've ever had in your life. And I just laid there and I thought, what the hell is going on with me? Because I just kind of woke up, and then I said, what is going on with me? Something's going on with me. And I got up in a start and I sat on the edge of the bed and I said, I have absolutely no idea what that was. I don't know what that was. I felt like something was trying to suck my brain out of my head. I don't know what that was, but I was going to ask you the same question. When you have visitations, which I suspect you do, and I suspect when I have visitations, mine are invisible, but there are things that happen, and I can tell in my body that something has visited me or something. Have you ever become aware of when you think you might have had or have had visitations? Like you mentioned the thing, like, yeah, if you're near gold or something, all of a sudden your body is like reacting. That I find is fascinating. Are there other things that happen to you that resonate with you from this discussion that might maybe make you think about, yeah, well, maybe that did happen last night? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, I'm not going to fib to you. I'm still one of those people that aliens scare me and they remind me of a horror flick.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what that is. When I went on the ship with the blondes, no fear. Everything was fine. They did do a couple of things. I'm not going to go into that. I wasn't happy about.
Yeah.
On the grays and the time they put the thing in my lung, I do remember crying. And so the fear factor is there as a trigger. So regarding any visitations, you sent me a couple of your books. I'm very excited to read them. But at the same time, I have a fear factor of reading them because I'm so sensitive to some of this stuff that I thought, oh God, if I read this book, it's almost like a door opens, not a portal, but just some kind of invisible door. And they're going to be able to see me or talk to me or do whatever again. But, you know, the unknown, of course, is always a fear factor with something like that. I don't recall anything weird like that lately. I mean, my dreams have been very, very much, they're like a movie, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And sometimes they talk about people and their alien experiences, because recently I had two clients call and talk about it. But again, I have a little bit of a fear factor. So far, nobody's cut my arm off or toe off or anything scary. Nothing, thank God, with the brain, but I would not put anything past them. I wonder if they were trying to turn on another synapse in the brain and they're saying, hey, but I'll say this. I know that you've had experiences. I've had experiences, and I call it the triangle effect. And it's almost like a connection. So you got the alien at one point of the triangle, you and I at another point of a triangle, and they're coming in. It's almost like a vortex, portal, whatever you want to term it. And I find that they're up to something, and they use that vortex to come in and do whatever their goal is. And, you know, we still don't know what their goal is. I mean, I understand the hybridization. That's easy.
Yeah.
But I sometimes feel like some of my dreams are manipulative to say, yep, Jeanette, do this because it will affect this, like a domino effect. But on your brain, again, I think they're shaking your brain, or they're saying to your brain, we want you to know this information. And if it felt like that, they could have tightened the brain, and which is, it, in a way, it's sort of cool, but at the same time, it's sort of frightening. That's my bet based on my knowledge.
Well,
it was the
weirdest feeling, because I never had it before. And I just, like, I became conscious enough after a certain point of lying there and thinking, oh, this is just my dream, right? You know, and I dream very vividly too. Boy, I'll tell you, I don't know where I come up with some of this stuff, but I would say, wow, I can see people's features and just, you name it, in my dreams. It's so vivid and so real. And so I'm sure many people can relate to this, but when it was that point where my brain was like going, okay, what's going on in my head? Okay, I'm waking up. What the heck is going on in my head? And it wasn't just then. There was another time here at home in my own bed, which I believe we have a portal or some kind of vortex around this inside or whatever this house. But I was lying there, and all of a sudden, let's see, if you would take your right hand and you would put your hand literally on half of your skull, my brain started to tingle really extensively. And I have had my infrared camera pick up some of these not dust orbs fly into my body, fly into probably my head or whatever. Just the weirdest stuff happening to me. Now, it doesn't happen all the time. It happens when it wants to happen. But for those out there that have heard your story now and have heard mine, and Jeanette has something inside her body, probably more than one thing inside her body, the question ultimately is, other than your children probably have been affected, and they probably have implants inside of them as well, is what exactly are they you know, tracking you for? And I guess we'll never really understand that question or that answer.
No, well, we can only have a theory.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, people do know I've written about in books. People can Google me. But what's interesting is when I had my near death, the first big one, I would say, was with alien stuff. And they told me what they wanted me to do, which was finding missing people. And then all of a sudden, shortly after that, I did the Chandra Levy case, high profile. And then eventually the Kaylee Anthony case. Now, was that their goal? Was that their, them reaching out saying, we want you to, I was told to go find God's people. So, and I don't want to use that so emphatically, but if God has a reason for it and the aliens have a reason for it, okay. I'm not really sure what it is, but, you know, I follow the direction and I help whenever I can on missing persons. Now, for fun, thank God, I do treasure work, and that's where my mouth reacts funny. I'm not sure if there's some agenda with the treasure hunting, except for, I think historically, a lot of the things I find are pretty impressive. I mean, an Al Capone treasure, or recently I just went to New England and I found not one ship, but two ships. And the guy I'm working for found a Roman coin from 350 AD. And then I found some other parts of the ship, 350 AD. So are they interested in history? Are they interested in missing persons? I mean, what are they really, like you said, what do they really want? What's their agenda? I'm not really sure. I mean, you know, some people are saying, oh gosh, we're just robots in time. Yeah, well, okay. So I'm cooking dinner and that's part of my time. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I think most people would feel like a robot cooking dinner, but, but you bring up a really good point here. The point, of course, and a mystery question that I'm not sure anyone will ever be able to answer. And even if we die and we are conscious enough at our death, to still be conscious enough to say, okay, now tell me what the answer is. It's not like we can really relay it to anybody, because that just seems to be the secret that goes to our death with us is, okay, what's your agenda? What was going on here? What's the big purpose? But, you know, the one thing that I'm going to have to go eventually with a part two on Jeanette here, because we have a lot more to talk about regarding her missing persons and her treasure hunting and stuff like that. And as part one of this interview, which unfortunately we're going to have to close up here in about 1 minute. Jeanette, before we get to part two, and I will get you back and we'll get a part two going here. Tell everybody a little bit about how, if they want to reach out to you, for what kinds of things would you do if they reached out to you, and what kind of information can you give?
Sure. So the first thing is, if they need to reach me, 571-358-1444 in Virginia, in the US. If they want to look up my website, it's Reach Jeanette, Reach, R-E-A-C-H, Jeanette, G-I-N-E-T-T-E.com. And if you need to email me, it's reachjeanette@gmail.com. And I do a little bit of everything. And you can certainly look on the website and see the various things I do.
Let's now head on over to part two.